various Talmidim of Reb Chaim related the following incident, including one of the great Goyinim, which was the Mechaber of Sefer Nachlas David, Reb David Tevel. It was one of the great Talmidim of Reb Chaim Volozhin. It was on particularly one late Erev Shabbos, just before Shkia. So Reb Chaim's family was surprised to hear that there was an urgent knocking on the door, and there was a yid by the name of Reb Zev Wolf. Reb Zev Wolf was a shamus of the Minsk Bezdin. And when the Bezdin had various shlichus to send to Reb Chaim, they would send him. They send this Reb Zev Wolf to carry out the shlichus in terms of bringing back an answer from Reb Chaim. And his arrival, the fact that this shliach came just before Shabbos, was quite surprising. Lamaisa, the shamus had been deliberating the entire journey from Minsk. He was not sure how to present this particular question or this particular information to Reb Chaim. He didn't know actually how to do it, as we'll soon see why. And he was deliberating the entire trip, figuring how to mention it precisely, how to relay the incident, the message that he was sent to deliver. Lamai says he stood at the door speechless when he came for a number of minutes, but just speechless. He was trying to speak, but just couldn't speak. So Reb Chaim himself broke the silence. And Reb Chaim says, "Do you mean to say that the rumor about the Yovam reached Minsk? You mean that the rumor concerning the Yovam reached Minsk?" Well, the Maisa was that story began actually 5 years earlier. 5 years earlier, when a childless almona, right, sought permission to remarry on the basis of proofs that her husband's only brother, right, died also. Because we know that the halach is that if a woman's husband dies and they don't have children, if there is a surviving brother, she needs chalitza before she can marry anybody else. Right? It's not a get, but it's chalitza. It's a particular document, which is according to the din of the Torah, she's not allowed to get married unless she receives chalitza. So situation was that she came to Reb Chaim and trying to present various proofs that in fact that the surviving brother really also died. So in fact there is no surviving brother. So Reb Chaim, who listened and accepted the woman's fruit after lengthy deliberation, and he permitted her to remarry. What happened was that this was 5 years before that, so the woman subsequently, she moved to Minsk, she remarried, and Lamaisa, she born three children. She had three children. So now this Rabbi Zev Wolf, the Zev Wolf comes to Reb Chaim, and he's trying to say something, and he's not able to say it. So Reb Chaim says, "You mean to say that the rumor about the Yovam, the fact that there is a surviving brother, which basically means that Reb Chaim committed a terrible error, because in fact, if there is the Yovam, right, if the husband's brother, surviving brother, if he's really alive, that means that he did not have the right to allow the woman to get married, and she's living in sin. Every moment that she's living with this other husband, she's not allowed to get married, and she had children by this unsanctioned marriage." So Reb Chaim therefore said to Reb Zev Wolf, I see that you're trying to say something, but you're afraid to say it. Is the rumor about the Yovam, did it arrive in Minsk, that the Yovam is alive? Is that what happened? Because years later, after Reb Chaim gave the heter, in fact, so many circles in Volozhin, in central Russia, the Maisa there, where the brother, the deceased brother-in-law, had lived, so they saw an opportunity that maybe, as we mentioned already once, to try to embarrass Reb Chaim. And therefore, actually, they paid a local chevroman, somebody they saw, that he is somebody that he's whenever you need trouble, he's ready for the right price, he'll do it. So they hired this particular person, and he went from town to town, and he was proclaiming that he was the Yovam, in fact, that he was the one, that he is the brother of the deceased, who Reb Chaim presumed to be dead. And sure enough, the rumors of the man's appearance already reached Reb Chaim. Reb Chaim saw no reason for concern. no concern. So this was again, took place just Mamish Erev Shabbos, just before sunset, before Shkia. Chaim did not mention it throughout the entire Shabbos, Tamotzi Shabbos. Only then, he told Reb Zev Wolf, he said to him, told Reb Zev, return to Minsk and tell the woman and her husband that they have nothing to fear, that the Yovan was an imposter, without even seeing him, without even interviewing whoever this person said. Just tell her, I have nothing to fear, the Yovan is an imposter, there's no surviving brother, and the marriage is a kosher marriage that she had with this other person. He also told Reb Zev that the Minsk Bezin should keep their eyes open and to seize the opportunity that as soon as this person makes his appearance and he's claiming that he is the Yovan, to make sure to grab him, to interrogate him closely, respect, to see if he knows the smallest details of the family. Because in fact, if he is the surviving brother, then he should know many, many things that only a member of the family would know. It's related that less than a week passed before this imposter made his appearance at Minsk, and he started to cry out, I'm the Yovam, he says, I'm the Yovam, he says. And his message reached the ears of the Bezin. The Bezin heard about it. The Bezin did exactly as Reb Chaim instructed him shortly after the cross-examination. And they interrogated him. The imposter broke down. He confessed, in fact, that he was hired to besmirch Reb Chaim's name. Another indication, again, of how Reb Chaim's greatness, and when he paskins something, you know, that he had this yad d'shmai that no mitzvah, no obstacle came across through whatever he paskened in his psakim, even though many times, as you saw, others tried to besmirch him and so on and so forth. Regarding the Sefer Nefesh HaChaim, we're doing now is Ruach Chaim. The Nefesh HaChaim is something that we had the privilege to discuss a number of years ago. Of all the writings of Reb Chaim himself attached himself very specially or very closely to the Sefer Nefesh HaChaim, and that can be seen from his last words, from his deathbed instructions that he gave to his son Reb Itzel. Two subjects actually dominated his thoughts at the final moments of Reb Chaim grew near. There's two situations, and one was the future of the yeshiva, to make sure that Reb Itzel was going to succeed and make sure that he puts in all the effort to see that the yeshiva continues on. And the second thing was the publication of the Sefer Nefesh HaChaim. Nefesh HaChaim was not published yet. So the last words of instruction that he gave to his son is to make sure that he takes responsibility to see that the Sefer Nefesh HaChaim will be published. And respect, as we mentioned, to the publication of Nefesh HaChaim, Reb Chaim urged his son to see the project through its completion with all possible, he says, not to change even a single word of what he had written. Sefer Nefesh HaChaim was written word for word by Reb Chaim himself. Sometimes, you know, you edit situations later on, and you say, maybe he didn't want this, maybe he didn't want this. Reb Chaim said, no. So make sure that you publish it the way it is. And every word that is in there, this should be published, and not to try to change even a single word. So Reb Itzel himself records his father's words in the introduction to the Nefesh HaChaim. So Reb Itzel writes the following. Reb Chaim said, and he's quoting his father, Reb Chaim was saying to him, as we say, just before he died, my son, Reb Chaim is saying to Reb Itzel, and this is Reb Itzel writing, said, my son should trouble himself to print this manuscript very quickly. And Reb Chaim very humbly says, even though I did not merit to learn too much myself, said Reb Chaim, he was indicting himself, did not learn enough Torah, but Shemayim, heaven granted me this chus to teach others and to establish Torah learning. And if I did not merit to have enough Yerushimayim to fear Hashem, I will have the schus that my words in the Sefer will promote Yerushimayim unto others. That which I was not zeiche myself, but hopefully the Sefer, anybody who learns the Sefer, will be able to gain much Yerushimayim, and will gain the desire to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu with a leiv tor, with a purity of heart, of those who truly seek to find and to know Hashem's ways. So here we see that Reb Chaim was very, very, as we saw, was very close to his heart to see that the Sefer Nefesh HaChaim is printed immediately. But in spite of that fact, Reb Itzel was unable to do it. But not able to publish it right away, as his father wished that the Sefer Nefesh HaChaim be published immediately. Why? Because in addition to the burden of maintaining the yeshiva, it took up a lot of his time. These are the two things that Reb Chaim said. Make sure that the yeshiva continues to flourish. Make sure that the future of the yeshiva continues. And publish the Sefer Nefesh HaChaim. So the burden of the yeshiva really took up a lot of his time. In addition to that, he also was forced to become involved in many pressing communal activities, communal manners, which that was a result of the various edicts and decrees of the Tsar, and needed to be tried to revoke all of those things. That necessitated, they actually had to travel a lot to St. Petersburg to have meetings with all the government officials to try again to revoke all the various decrees. It took a lot of time. So actually it took him 3 years. It was 3 years after his father passed away that Reb Chaim finally saw, so to speak, Reb Chaim's wishes, actually, that the Sefer Nefesh HaChaim was actually published. In addition to the other tzaros that Reb Itzel also had, Reb Itzel lost two sons. Two sons died. One was a baby born to him on his father's first yahrzeit. On Reb Chaim's first yahrzeit, the son, and his son was named Chaim. The baby was named Chaim. His father's first yahrzeit died. And the second child that he had, died 3 days after his bris. He died after his bris. And excuse me. The one was named Chaim. He died 3 days after his bris. And the other one, who was really a genius, they say, 8 years old, one could see already godless, he passed away at the age of 8. So he did not have it easy. But it's so very interesting. It was very quick to interpret, why did Shemayim do this to him? Why did this happen? Why did this happen? What happened in his life, or what did he do in his life that would cause that Shemayim take away two of his sons? Didn't take long. But what he did was said very easily, he came to interpret that the death of the two sons was a divine punishment for having delayed in fulfilling his father's dying request to publish the Sefer right away. And he writes the following. The guilt lies with me, so writes Reb Itzel. The guilt lies with me, because I did not hurry to fulfill the words of my father as he commanded me. I was doubly punished, he says, through my progeny, his children, for my transgression. It's an amazing thing. How he took this responsibility. And he indicted himself for feeling that, and even though he had good reasons mentioned, it wasn't an easy thing, it was almost impossible for him to do. But yet he felt, maybe did not do enough or did not try enough. The Nefesh HaChaim, once it was published, was immediately recognized to be a very major work, as a seminal work. And one of the great Rabbanim, Rabban Bakst was a Rav of Shavil, wrote in the Askome to the Sefer Ruach Chaim, he writes the following. When I read the letter that asked me, he says, that I should write Askome to Reb Chaim's writing, he says, my face is flushed in humiliation. He says, I should give a letter of Askoma to the work of the light of Israel, to the light of Klal Yisrael, to the Ner Yisrael. Reb Chaim of Elojin, who am I? Who am I worthy to write a letter of approbation, to write a letter of Askoma? So writes this Rabban Bakst. It is interesting is that in the first days, it is mentioned that in the first days after the appearance of the Nefesh HaChaim, the publishers feared that others would copy from it. Those days was a very, very thing, you know, in thing, to make sure that there is copyright. That you have copyright, because it is a common thing that when a popular thing was published, we very quickly others to try to use to make a parnos out of it, also publish it in other areas and so on and so forth. So the public, they already saw the success of the Sefer Nefesh HaChaim, they were concerned that others might come and might copy it. And they exactly understood that this is a new light that came into the world with the Nefesh HaChaim. So I just want to mention to you that the first 50 years of its first printing, it was already 6 new printings. And it's not like today, you know, it's very easy if you want to print a Sefer. There was a very, very difficult situation because it was short of remarkable to do it, because you realize that there's only a few places that you actually have Jewish printing, and to have it reprinted 6 times in the first 50 years was really a remarkable situation. Regarding again the Nefesh HaChaim, let me just point out one more thing, which is an interesting thing, and that is that regarding the impact that the Sefer Nefesh HaChaim had, regarding the impact, is when the great Balamusa, Reb Itzel Ponovitcher writes, actually a great Goyen he was, Reb Itzel Ponovitcher writes, you should take to heart, he says, put it into your heart. Take to heart, these are the words of Reb Chaim, because it is appropriately named Nefesh HaChaim, because in fact, it's life for the neshama, it's life for the soul. Nefesh HaChaim, that's what it is. The Sefer is appropriately named Nefesh HaChaim, it is life for the soul. So Mr. Lepanim just said, so whenever you look into the Sefer, realize how much there is to be gleaned, how much to be learned from it. Later on years, the Telz Rosh Yeshiva, going back to Europe now, the Telz Rosh Yeshiva, and the author of the Sefer Shira Das, which is Rabbi Yosef Leib Bloch, the Maril Bloch. Rabbi Yosef Leib Bloch used to say they had two masters in Ashkofe. One was Ramchal, but Moshe Chaim Lutzato. Of course, we had the privilege to learn either B'Sichas Yesharim or the Derech Hashem. And the other one he said is Reb Chaim. These are the two masters that I have in Ashkofe. And he once told his Talmidim, we know how great, he says, and elevated Reb Chaim Volozhin was, that even in his short work, Nefesh HaChaim, it's possible to see the great Tzidkus and his holiness. His image, he says, his image stands before my eyes as if he were alive. And perhaps, he said to the Talmud, maybe it's not true for you, but for me it's so. And by saying this, he actually echoed the words of Rabbi Itzel Panovich, who described Nefesh HaChaim as having the power to arouse the hearts of its readers, as if they heard it from Rabbi Chaim actually live. So that's also a very specific feature. When you read something, it's not the same as hearing it live. But there's an exception. We've gone to the Sefer Nefesh HaChaim that many Gedolei Yisrael, going back, have said that there's so much in that Sefer, there's so much Yati Dishmai in that Sefer that you read it properly, it's like hearing it from Chaim live. And you have, therefore, the tremendous influence that the Sefer is able to give. So you go here on both sides to the Ruach Chaim, Sedaf Mem Gimel in your edition. Starts a new Mishnah. We're going to say just a few phrases of this Mishnah, not the entire Mishnah, and see what Reb Chaim's interpretation is on the opening lines of this Mishnah. Mishnah says some Perik Aleph, Mishnah Hey. The Mishnah said that Yosi ben Yochanan ish Yerushalayim Omer. Yosi ben Yochanan was an ish Yerushalayim would say, Yibes chapsuach lirvocha. Make sure that your house has an open door. It means you should be ready, you should be generous. You should have an open door to be ready and generous to share your good blessings with others. See that your house is open. To see that you share from your good fortune. And also poor people should be like members of your household. To have a poor person in your house should not be someone who comes once a year, but that's similar to a member of the family, which of course is there all the time, very frequently. So the Mishnah says also, Aniyim should be like Bnei Beisecho. Should have poor people that should be Bnei Beisecho. Meaning you should always be ready to invite Aniyim, people that need your assistance. It says also, Valtar B'Sicho Misha. And don't overly much carry on communication with women. So now we take a look what Reb Chaim says here on the words Yibes Chapsuach Lervocha. Chaim's interpretation that your house keeps you to have an open house, have an open door. Here teva tzedakah shema sheres. Chaim said that the teva of giving tzedakah is that it's masheres. It gives you ashiris. It gives you riches. Moshama, the Gemara says in Ksubas, Melach Mamen Choser. It's a very interesting phrase. And Rashi explains the following. When people, let's say, have meat, you can imagine those days when there's no refrigeration. So how would one preserve meat? Well, the way they used to also, people like who took journeys, long journeys, was they salted it. By salting, by pickling it, right, then it's able to last a long time. By salting meat, it lasts a long time. That's how you preserve it. So the Gemara Ksuba says, very interesting, it's sort of like a mashal. If someone wants to salt money, you want to preserve your money. You want to salt money, that's the mashal. You want to preserve your money. The way to preserve your money is, diminish the money. Some of it. Share it with others. Give away some of it. By giving some of it away, that's the way to preserve your money. You think that you're going to have less. The way to really preserve your melach money, right? How does one salt his money? Mean to say, how does one preserve his money? Chosar, be mechaser from it. Allow yourself, right? Allow yourself to have a little bit less. Share what you have. Extend it to others. V'omrlon, some said, instead of chosar, chesed, do chesed with your money. If you chesed with your money, that's the way of salting your money. That's the way of preserving your money. Rav Chaim says on the outset, people right, who write checks, on the outset they think that they're actually losing money at the outset, because they don't see the bracha right away. So Rav Chaim says, V'im, and even though, ki ein ze murgish lakoil, not everybody really, right? Not everybody really feels it, that there is a bracha in giving. Not everybody feels there is a bracha in giving. Makol makoim, nevertheless, as Rav Chaim, b'chol dor, throughout the generation, reim onu shekenu. We see that this is the way it is. Uksiv, we have a pasuk in Hosea. The pasuk is the following. Ziru lochem litzdoka. Plant tzedoka for yourselves. Ziru lochem tzedoka. Plant tzedoka. Plant charity for yourself. V'kitzru l'vichosit. And reap according to your kindness. Right? When you plant something, you hope one day that it's going to grow and you'll be able to harvest, to reap. So the Novi says, Hosea says, plant tzedoka. And when you plant something, you hope to reap. Well, how much are you going to reap? Well, how much grows out? How much bracha grows out of it? How much? What determines how much bracha grows out of it? So it says, v'kitzru l'fi chesed. V'kitzru means you'll be zeicher, you'll have the merit to be able to reap and to harvest according to how much chesed that you have done. And Reb Chaim goes on to explain. Ki azareha, because somebody actually who plants, who sows, somebody who plants, the way it works is, noitl tvor, he takes some grain, umashlich hoisoi, regovim, and right, and he throws the grain, he throws the seeds into some chopped dirt. That's what you do, you take the seed and throw it into the ground. Throw it into the ground. Now, will anybody say, v'chiyoyma hazareya, will anybody say, somebody who wants to plant the seed in the ground, will he say, oily, woe to me, kinid mesil mishuga, the chosar habine. Will a person say, am I really normal to take a healthy seed and to plant into the ground? To bury it in the ground? No one would say that. Why? Because you already know by experience that even though someone who never saw farming will never understand how you take a healthy seed, just put it and bury it in the ground. But no one who really knows anything about it will never say such a thing. Will never say such a thing. He will not say, oily woe to me, kinid mesil, I made a mistake. Nid mesil lemishuga. Right? V'chosar habine. I'm like someone who lacks understanding. Right? V'kachas yigia kap, to take grain, the product of my hand, lizrak loris, to take a healthy seed in the ground. Chit of a soil, to take some wheat, to take some barley, to take a handful of it and throw it in the ground. No one will say that. Why not? Because, kivin shebe'emes hu, because you know, putting seeds into the ground, from a little comes out a lot. That's the fact. It doesn't grow immediately. It takes weeks, takes months, but at the end of the day, you see the product. You see the broch in what you have done. You see it at a later date. Kivin shebe'emes hu, this is the way it is, laharvocha. Planting the seeds, putting the seeds into the ground. The purpose is, of course, to bring blessing. Machnis kimoi, he puts in a little. Umoisi haben, takes out a lot. Befazer chitim, he scatters some wheat, ma'at, a little bit of wheat. Venoisi haben, a lot more comes out later. The same thing is by planting tzedakah. Person sometimes thinks planting tzedakah means like I'm burying my money. Like I'm burying it. I buried it. Instead of keeping it, planting tzedakah. So he says, Kena dover binyan zuis tzedakah. Near on the outset it appears mechaser moisof. It looks like he's losing some of his money. He's giving up some of his money. Alabama says, it's like planting a seed. What happens when you plant a seed? What comes out of it? Many more. Much more grows out of it. So doctor is also like planting a seed, which means is, whatever you gave away, much more comes out later. Alabama says, when you give tzedakah, this is like planting lahaviyacha bebitzmiche, which will bring out a lot, will come out later. You know, if you plant an apple seed, what grows out of it? Apples. Oranges don't grow out of it, right? If you plant an apple seed, apples grow out. If you plant the seed of a pear tree, what grows out of it? Pears. If you plant tzedakah, what grows out? Zareya tzedakos, matzmiach yeshuas. That's what comes out. That's it. Plant an apple seed, an apple tree comes out. If you plant tzedakah, Matzmiach Yeshuas come out. That's what comes out. That's what they saw. That's the product. And the commercial causes, as the Pesuk says in Yecheskel Mandalit. Reishis Arisaseichem Titnu Lakoyim. The Pesuk says that what? That the first portion of dough you give to the Koyim. We know we separate challah. So Reishis Arisaseichem, the first portion of your dough, Titnu Lakoyim. But the Novis add something. L'niach Brocha El Beisecho. You're giving away challah? You think you're giving away? You're giving away a portion? No. You're giving away, but la'aniyah bracha, in exchange of that, you're actually, instead of taking out what else you're bringing in, you think you're taking out. It's not true. La'aniyah bracha be'sech, we're actually bringing in bracha. Bringing bracha into your house. U'kamosh yekosuv. As the Pasuk says the following. It says in Parshas Nosoi, v'ishes kadoshav lo yiyu. Now, v'ishes kadoshav lo yiyu, Pasuk talks about a person, let's say, may not want to give truma to the Kohen. A person may not want to give the 10% to the Levi. So Chazal say, and Rashi makes a point of it, that if you keep that which you'd be giving away, the end of the day is, instead of you giving to the Kohen, instead of you giving to the Levi, the end of the day is you're going to have to take. You're going to have to be the taker. You have two choices. You can be a giver, you can be a taker. So the Pasuk says, the ishes kedoshav lo yiyu pirish, she'enem noisnam. If the kedoshav, if the holy, right? If the holy sections which have to be given away, if he does not give it away, v'yashirem loy, kedoshav lo yiyu pirish, she'yayoni, he'll become poor, v'yakabal ma'asroni. Instead of giving 10% to the poor person, if you don't do that, in other words, you take away what you should be giving away, the end is that you may switch maybe positions. You may be on the position of the taker. You may have to take yourself. You may come into a position, you'll have to take my Saroni. V'asher yitein l'kohen, on the other hand. But that which you give away to the kohen. Lo yihyeh. Here it says with the hey, not you. Ksiv kan yihyeh behey. V'lo yibavov. Uper yilehav behyeh. He will have. Yilehav a lot. As Chazal point out, the Masechta Brachos, and as the Pasuk says in the Devarim, Nosa in Titein, make sure that you give. So now, so we see that there is a metaphor here. See, there's a metaphor that the Pasuk actually describes giving tzedakah like planting. The same way that a person plants a seed, so giving tzedakah is also is similar to planting. So Reb Chaim, but you notice says it's similar to planting, but it's way ahead. It's way ahead of planting. And let's take a look why. In a yoyser niflais, he says, it's much more incredible, says Reb Chaim, zeruyas ha-tzedokah, mizeruyas ha-tvua. The idea of planting tzedokah, so to speak, is much more. It's much more of a chiddush. It's a tremendous innovation. It's a tremendous greatness you'll find out in that. More, he said, than planting grain. Do you know what happens when you plant grain? Well, the thing is like this. When you plant grain, what happens to a seed is the seed rots. The seed rots. So the profit that you gain is, right, is what comes out later. The profit you gain is what grows out later, but the seed itself is gone. The seed rots. But what you get is that which grows out. When you give tzedakah, says Reb Chaim, which is compared to planting, but unlike planting, that the seed rots, the tzedakah that you give, that seed is like putting it in the bank. You have that noilam haba. Besides that which grows out of it, like any seed, all the schar, all that grows out of it, which Kushbach will repay you on this world, but the seed itself, the tzedakah itself that you gave away is not like planting a seed. Where that seed rots, the tzedakah never rots. The tzedakah you gave away, you actually put it in your bank account, your spiritual bank account, that's always there, going to be there for you. This is the nekuda that Reb Chaim points out. Kisham, when you plant hazera, nirkev. You plant zera, the zera becomes rotted, all over and on top of it, or through that, yotzitz perach. Comes out of flower, grows out of it. Things grow out of it. But the zera itself, the seed itself, rots. The tzedakah, but in the case of tzedakah, azriya atzma. The tzedakah itself that you planted, means the tzedakah itself that you gave away, gamkein eino kolo. Not like a seed that you plant. The seed itself rots. No. By tzedakah, planting tzedakah means when you give away tzedakah, it never, he says, it never becomes destroyed. Ugenuz olamalo. It really goes way up to Shemayim. All the merit of that tzedakah goes up and it is hidden. It's hidden in the safe deposit box, as he says. Kiman Ramun, the Mumbus was a rich king. He was a king and he gave away most of his assets, most of his treasure he gave away to tzedakah. And when the family said, why are you giving it all away? So the Gemara tells them, Bavabasu Yudala, Mumbus says, what do you mean I gave it away? Whatever I gave away, I put into my account. It's all there. I stashed it away for myself. Loyal Mabo. So Reb Chaim. In other words, the tzedakah itself that you gave away, that tzedakah itself that goes up to Shemayim, right? and secures your chelik olam haba. Now, what about the harvesting, the reaping? That's a result of the planting, what comes out. Achaksira mizriya zu, the harvesting that comes out, the product, right, of that planting, boil mazeh, hain hoisher. That Kibbutz will bless you with Ashiris. However, if Kibbutz will bless you with Ashiris, it's not definite that you're going to be able to keep it. Why? Because when you get Ashiris, you have a second obligation again to share with it. So the Shaila is now, what are you going to do with the Ashiris? Kibbutz is going to bless you with all the wealth. The question, but what are you going to do with that? That now comes along with the responsibility. So the Kitzira, the reaping the reward of the tzedakah on this world, which HaKadosh gives you Ashiris, he gives you wealth, it's not definite that's his. It's not always going to remain with him. The person leaves this world and it's all gone. So the giving away the tzedakah is more than the harvesting, because the tzedakah itself that you give away, that goes up to Shemaim right away. So again, in the case of tzedakah, the giving away the money that you give for tzedakah, that's more than the harvesting, because when you harvest, because Baruch Hu blesses you with Ashiris, there's a responsibility. Happens zriya through it. That's the opposite that when you plant through it. When you plant through it, the actual zriya, the seed, is gone. But by tzedakah, that which you gave away is always with you. It's always with you. That's what the Pesach now is saying. Zero lochem l'tzedakah. The Pesach that I mentioned before in Yecheskel, in Hoshea. Zero lochem. What do you mean zero lochem? When you actually give tzedakah, you're giving to yourself. Zero, the Pesach says, lochem l'tzedakah. She has real lochem, v'loy l'zarim. It's not for strangers. V'kitzru. And as far as how much are you going to reap, how much are you going to harvest? Hainu ho'osher. How much chesed are you going to do? How much chesed are you going to do with it? By the kitzira, by the harvesting, it doesn't say the word lochem for you, like by the planting when you give away. Because Baruch blesses you with Ashiris, it's not definitely going to be yours. Because the question, what are you going to do with it? That which you gave away, you definitely did something good with it right away. So that which you gave away, the Zriya, planting tzedakah means you gave away the tzedakah. That which you gave away, you right away you have. That's lochem. But the bracha that comes as a result of that is not a definite. It's going to remain with you. But you're talking about zeh lefarish lefi chesed. It means you're going to have the schus to keep the blessings, right, that come out of the tzedakah. Lefi chesed hayne kifi shetizku. According to how much schus you have, yaksire im lochem im loy. So it's determined according to the person how he's going to use really those blessings. So now, having said that, says Reb Chaim, zeh shomer atana. So this was the Tana now was saying. Going back to the Mishnah. Yibeschot pesuach. The Tana of the Mishnah said, "Let your house have an open door." Yibeschot pesuach says Reb Chaim, "Val yiftecha yetzer. Do not allow yourself to be taken in by the Yetzer. The Yetzer tries. The Yetzer tries to fool you. The Yetzer tries to seduce you. The Yetzer tries to confuse you." Ubefrat says Reb Chaim, "The itim alolu in our time." When panos is difficult, that really is an opportune time for the Yitzhar to try to restrict you as much as possible, not to give anything for tzedakah. But after all, the panos is difficult. So Reb Chaim, especially in our time, when the panos is difficult, Yoy Meloch, the Yitzhar will say to you, "Dailoch lefanes asch mocho b'nei beischa b'doichik." It's enough that you're trying. It's enough that you're trying to support your family. Aren't you doing enough? Why are you giving away from the little that you have? Why are you trying to share with others? Why trying to share with others that which you work so hard for? Panos is so difficult to come by. You barely eke out a living. So it's a hard cry to tell them, don't share with anybody. Don't give anything to anybody. If you open your door, you're going to have revach. In other words, a person says, "I have difficult panosa. Why should I give tzedakah?" Guess what? If you give tzedakah, your panosa will be enhanced. You will no longer have that difficulty. It's the opposite. That's the solution. So, ye beischa pesuach, make sure that your door is open. Why? Levocha, because it's going to bring you revach. It's going to bring you revach. It's going to bring you panosa. It's going to bring you, they should be able to have comfort. In the contrary, it'll give you harvocha. It'll give you a lot of profit. It'll give you a way to extend and upgrade your level of life. So a person should not be concerned. Not be concerned. The difficulty of panos, if the more he gives away, the less he's going to have. Make it more difficult. Forget. The way, if you share from the little that you have, hopefully you will no longer have little. You have more. Lervocha. The Beis HaPesuach will bring a blessing of Revocha. The Yoma, now the mission continues. The Yira Niyim B'nei Beis Echo, Rotzaloyma. What the mission means to say the following. In the same way, very interesting, says, when somebody has weak panosa, let me explain. Somebody has weak panosa, but to his family, of course, he supports his family. These are members of his family. His problem is only when it comes to give tzedakah. Comes to give tzedakah, well, I barely have enough to support my family. So I have to support my family. I'm not able to share with others. So the Mishnah says, every Yid should be viewed as if he's part of your family. So every Yid part of your family, so no matter how much the shvach of the panoza is, you give to your wife and children. No matter how shvach, no matter how weak you give to your wife and children, every Yid should be viewed as part of your family. The Aniyim should be part of your family. So in the same way you give your family, I'm not going to say, I'm not giving to my family. Of course you're giving to your family. That's what you're working for. It's difficult. Panos is hard. But you give to your family. So the Shkofe, regarding to others, the Aniyim, he says, should be B'nei B'secho. Should view the Aniyim also being part of your family. What's the Leimer? Means to say, just as you give with a generous heart to members of your family, you give with a generous heart. You give with a generous heart. We'll have a decha to your servants. Why? Because they are part of you. Because members of your family, they are assisting you, they're part of you. Even your avodim, you're supporting your avodim. Why are you avodim? Because why? Because they are part of you, they are assisting you. So guess what? Cain, ba'ai, and yofa the same way with the generosity. Cain, if you think your family is helping you out, if you think you have Odim, the Anim to whom you give, they help you out even more. By the mere fact that you are giving to them. So they are giving you more. So why you give to members of your family? You're giving to your Avodim? Because the Avodim do things for you. When you give to Anim, they're doing much more for you. Because they're going to bring you Havoche. They're going to bring you blessing. Chazal say, very important medrash. Medrash in Rus, which we'll discuss soon, we can see on the sheet. Yoisim mimasha balabayis oisim enoni. More than the balabayis, the gevir does with the poor man does more for the gevir. The gevir doesn't realize it. I'm giving. He's taking. No. The medrash is the opposite. More than the balabayis does with the oni does more to him. Because in return, the Baruch Hu pays him back much, much more. As the medrash says. Not only that, it's not enough that you give. You have to give in a way that to make him feel good as well. The one who comes to the door should not feel like he's getting a handout. Don't make him feel that way. So that's why you have to say words of appeasement. The Gemara said very clearly, words of appeasement sometimes is more than the actual donation. The way how you treat him, the way how you speak to him. Therefore, gam tzorach lefayes ha'oni bedvorim. You have to appease the poor man with words. You have to appease him with words, with a sapri moi, before him sarkis, with a smile on the face, not to show that, oh, here, take the check, in there. No. You have to do it in a way that makes him feel good. In the same way that you speak to members of your family, when you give anything to them. Kemoshi misapri, as he speaks in Bonov with his children, ubnei beisa, and members of the family. Omru Chazal, Chazal themselves have said, hamafais habidvarim, someone who appeases the poor man with words, gets 11 brachas. Islam, more than sometimes the actual tzedakah. Because tzedakah, the Gemara says, gets six brachas you get. And hamafaisa, but you go the extra way, you go extra, besides that, to make him feel good. Hamafaisa, with bar mitzvah, but you know, 11 brachas. For Lezay Omar. And therefore, oh, says very interesting. So now, says Zaninya, so now when you give money to the Oni, right? Mechaim explains the whole hemshich of the Mishnah further. Here, it's a gevaldik echad. So, it means like this. When the Oni comes to the door, it's in addition to giving him whatever the donation, but you should speak to him, appease him, make him feel good. And maybe try to give him some hope that times will... now it's hard times. Give him hope that what? That Bez Hashem, time, you'll see better, you'll see nachas. Speak to him in a way that uplifting words. So, what happens now that you have a woman at the door? Of course, you give him a donation. So a woman you also have to speak nicely to, but don't make the same long conversation as you have with an oni. Altar b'sicha misha, that's what it says that. That's the altar b'sicha misha. That even though by giving to the oni, in addition to the oni, there's an inyan right to communicate with him, the woman also speaks to her nicely, but don't make that long communication that you would have. That's what it says further. Even though that you have to appease the oni with words also, it's not enough just to give what you're giving, but you have to appease him with words. Im koze, nevertheless, altar b'sicha misha, afila aniyo. Even if you haven't been born. Right? You can be Mikhaim that Bikitzer. He said that you can do it. I'll complain that. So this is what the Mikhaim talks about. And we'll see that coming up the Yom Tov Yeshuas, relating exactly what the Mikhaim is talking about the Eden of Tzedakah. And we find out that the role of Tzedakah and Gemilas Chesed, we find it, matter of fact, from Rus. So let's take a look. Megillah Rus, which of course the Megillah for Shuas. And let's take a look. We see here the item that we have here. What we have here is the first three lines of the Ruach Chaim on top of the sheet. A few lines of Chaim, because that's what we're going to be addressing. The Mishnah is telling us, make sure that you have an open door. Well, if the Chai Yetzer, do not allow yourself to be taken in by the Yetzer Hara, who's trying to convince you, don't give, you can't afford it. Ubefat, especially as we learned, this is still quoting Reb Chaim, right? Be itim alo, especially our time now, Reb Chaim is saying, Mekoshia Panosa, where Panosa is difficult to come by, Yoy Melechot, the Yitzhar will say to you, Dailoch, it's enough, Lefar Nesatzmacho, Ubenei Beishcho Bedoichi. It's enough that you have difficulty supporting your family. Lomet Tefazel Acherim Cheloch. Why do you want to also try to scatter and try to spend and share with others? So the Tana says, Levocha, because that will bring you Havocha. It's the opposite. You're worried because you have difficult panos, you don't want to share. It's the opposite. By having an open door, Levocha, they'll bring more profit, it'll bring you more Revach, it'll enhance your lifestyle. Now, we have a sefer called Avner Chayin. It's not a very popular sefer, but it's a very interesting thing, essay that he has over here. And he points out the following. There are many different reasons given. Why do we read Megillas Rus on Shavuos? On Yom Tov Shavuos, why do we read Megillas Rus? So, Echad HaTamim Shekoren Rus, right, be Yom Shavuos. Right, one of the reasons, the Rus also saw, because Rus did a tremendous Gemilas Chesed Im Chamoiso. We find that Rus did a tremendous Gemilas Chesed with her mother-in-law, as we'll see. And Mela, the prelude to accept Torah, to be a Yid of Torah Shavuos, is receiving the Torah. To receive the Torah, you have to have Chesed. In other words, the vehicle to make us worthy to accept the Torah, you have to have Chesed. Megillas Rus teaches us a very profound and fundamental lesson in Chesed. And that happens to be the Agdama. That's the introduction to receiving Torah. If you don't have Chesed, you cannot really receive the Torah. So Megillas Rus is being read. Because it's only appropriate for the nation receiving the Torah. That's the idea of Megillas Rus. Now, go to the Vegam Loi Mevura Maha Gemilas Chesed Am Yuchedes. Also, it's not very clear which part of Megillas Rus we find the exceptional, right, mid of Chesed by Rus. Which Nekuda? Which aspect of Megillas Rus that we find by Rus more than any other place? There is a Chiddush, Begemilas Chasodim Yuchid, we find by Rus. So, Devar Tchila. So first let's try to explain how Yuchid was special, was extra special to Gemilas Chasodim Berus. She'oysa Chazal Kol Kach Yichshivu. Chazal was so machshiv. Chazal gives so much chashivus to Rus, right, to Rus, the Gemilas Chesed of Rus. Ad Kedei She'tovsu Rak Oysa. This is the Megillah that Chazal incorporated. The Kori to read B'yoy Matan Torah. Lechabroi to connect it, or lekashroi im inyan matan Torah. There's something that has to be very special miyuchid. There's many areas that we can learn chesed from, but Megillas Rus was one that was chosen to be connected, right, with Kabbalah Torah. So what is the inyan miyuchid? What is so special? Which area in Megillas Rus really underscores, emphasizes the chashivus of chesed? Which aspect of chesed means we're going beyond and going the extra mile? Tchila Novi says, let's go bring, he says, as Tchilas Megillas Rus, the beginning of Megillas Rus. Shisham Ramus, because there we see, first of all, we see a Inyan, which is the Hepech If we're talking about finding chesed, the beginning of Milas Ruas talks about the opposite of chesed. Running away from chesed. That's how Milas Ruas begins. How do we see that? Shom kosu vayhi bimei shifoit ha-shoitim. Right, that's how it begins. Milas Ruas taking place in the time, the era of judges. The time of the era of the judges. Shifoit vayhi robars, and there was a famine in the land. And we are told, vayelechish mebeis lechem Yehuda, and a man left Eretz Yisrael, and he went down to Moav. Name of the man was who? Elimelech. Elimelech, due to the fact there was a famine in the land, he left Beis Lechem to go to Moav. So how do Chazal interpret what happened over here? With behind the scenes. Superficial reading is only superficial reading on top. You read the Megillah. But to find out, you know, the hidden aspects and the hidden situations. We look at Chazal, the Chazal come to tell us, simple reading is, there was a famine. So the man leaves Eretz Yisrael to go someplace else where there's food. That's a simple, literal translation. Chazal tell us there's much more. There's much more deeper. There are much more deeper issues here. He did not leave truly because of the famine. Because the particular person called Elimelech that left happened to be an extremely wealthy person. One of the most wealthy person in Eretz Yisrael. The wealthiest. If there was a famine in the land, he did not suffer. He did not have to leave. So why did he leave? This is what Chazal was telling us. It's a frightening thing how you learn a pasuk, then Chazal came and tell us what's behind the scenes. Simple understanding is, there was a famine in the land and he leaves because he's hungry. Nothing to eat. Chazal tell us, Loi shoharov heitzikloi. It was not the famine, the hunger that bothered him. B'lachein holach. El Avimelech hoya god lador. Listen to this. Avimelech was a god lador. He was a god lador vegam born of his children, his sons hoya gedoy lador. Machlin nechilin. They're all gedoy lador. V'ru hoya osher godol. And Elimelech was an osher godol. And we find B'medrash Rabbah, listen to this, the Medrash Rabbah tells us, the Anshe Iroi, the people who lived in the same city with him, Lodo Agu, they actually were not worried, B'Bitzayir, they were not worried about famine, you know why? Because they knew that Avimelech is so rich, he can support them for 10 years. This is what Chazal is telling us. So in spite of the fact that it was a famine, Chazal is telling us that the people of his town, where they lived together with him, they were not afraid of hunger. Because knowing the Ashiris, the wealth of Avimelech, of Elimelech, they knew that he could, they relied. They relied that he's going to support them for 10 years. Elimelech with Ashiris, Yuchalafanasom, Ke'esashonim. So guess what? So now when the famine approached, he was afraid that all of his wealth is just going to be, you understand? All of it's going to run out. All of a sudden, everybody's going to rely on him. And he's going to be supporting and supporting and supporting. Decided he's running away. He should not have to find a position to have to support the needy around him. That's why he ran away. He was afraid, even though he was an Osher Godel. There was a lot. More than enough. But he did not feel ready that he's going to share all the Asher that he had. Didn't want to do that. That's why he ran away. So he, instead of being involved in chesed, just the opposite. He ran away to avoid chesed. So interesting enough that Megillas who starts with the situation of someone, even though a great man, who ran away, left everything behind, because to avoid having to give chesed, because he knew if he was home, he would force. What can he do? He wouldn't have the bravery. He would have to respond. So Chazal are telling us again, when the famine arrived, Chosha, she was worried. Penu aniyim yaschilu lagzer al pischoi. It's very the aniyim, every day, every 2 minutes, the door, somebody will bang at the door. All the aniyim will come banging at the door, ringing the doorbell. Hichli, therefore, he decided, laver lizde moyov, he'll go to moyov until the famine stops, then he'll come back home. So in the meantime, nobody's going to bother me. Running away. He goes to Moab, Acharon Yafsik, Boaz Yahuza lets Israel come back to Israel. So it comes out, Nimsa, it's an incredible thing. Shazivosoi Mo'or is the reason that he left the land. Machashash, because he was worried that the Aniyim, that the poor people will ring his doorbell. That's what he was worried about. Shanim Yahuza Pishoi. That's what happened. Chazal told us, who borach me Beis Lechem Yehuda, the reason he ran away from Beis Lechem, kiloi rotzo ligmol chasodim imaniim, letoimchom to support the Meirov. And that's why the punishment came very quickly. We know what happened. But Karol, Mashikor, Imoiv, and Bonov, they died. children died, he died, till his wife, that's where Naomi comes in, comes back. She comes back in dire poverty. She had a house of rich, Elimelech was the richest man. Elimelech was very rich. But due to that, everything was lost at the end of the day. He died, children died, she comes back right in dire straits. To the extent, in order to survive, she had to resort to rely on what Rusa is going to bring her. Atkedekach was her poverty. Her poverty came to such a point that she had to rely. Going back in time when she was, right, she was the wife of the richest man around, but now things turned, the wheel turned around. She had to resort, pressure to be able to survive. Her survival was dependent on to receive what Ruth would stand when Ruth would go around to, from field, from various fields. In order to collect grain, that's what she had to depend on, what Ruth, her daughter-in-law, is going to send her. That's the handout from her daughter-in-law. Now, for a move of a Chazal, now Chazal do not tell us beferish be'ezin nesivois what the sibur was, what the cause was. Elimelech hifsid is called oishrei hagodol. Chazal don't say beferish how he lost his wealth, but you can put the dots together. Achzeh bor, but we can see shoytoyis l'alimelech. We see Elimelech made a mistake. Lachshe Elimelech thought that if he runs away, he's going to be able to preserve his wealth. He's not going to have to give it up. But at the end of the day, it turned out just the other one. Mistake in cheshem, calculation was just wrong. Clearly miscalculated. And that's the idea. So our boy says, let's go to the next little parallel. Let's go to number two. Akoponim, what we see, that Megillas Rus, which is supposed to teach us about Chesed, first of all tells us that the great Oynish, it traded the great negativity that can happen if you run away from Chesed. We saw what happened to Elimelech. So it begins to tell us, right, the consequences of someone who avoids Chesed. That's the beginning. Now we go later into the Megillah, a little bit further into the narration of the story. So now, Al Kaponim, again, in any case, Metchilas Ho'inyan, Shem Megillas Ruth, from the beginning of the Inyan, Roy Mesu'in Shah Bricha Shah Elimelech, we saw Avimelech was escaping, trying to escape, Minyan Agvilas Chasadim. And we also see on the other side, midah hatoytsoyes achamur, the terrible consequences. Shaloke begufoy, begam loke bemoinoy. Physically punished, his wealth was punished. Now, the next case comes, base hamiyuchid bechesed shel Rus, right? Shohoyo im chamoyso. Let's take a look. What's now the nekuda? What the specific nekuda of chesed that Rus did with her mother-in-law? The gamrus chitcha. Rus was also machadish. She also innovated a new thing. She yoyse mimacha balabais oyse mooni oni oyse balabais. We had it before. B'chaim mentioned it before. We had B'chaim mentioning before that more than the balabais does with the oni, the only does with the balabais. Who is machadish that? Who made this innovation? Who came up with that? That's Rus. Rus was the, we'll soon see where. It's a few words, a few simple words in Megillas Rus, where Rus is actually the one who sees clearly. The giver always thinks he's the giver, the other one's the taker. Rus taught not like that. The one who's taking is giving you more than you're giving him, because the blessing is going to be tenfold, because God is going to give you back. So let's take a look. Mirech. Let's take a look. If you want to analyze the gevaldige gemilas chesed that Ruth did, besides the fact the chesed that physically she walked with her, she went with her, she supported her, and so on and so forth, but we find also, going to point out, we want to save time, that Ruth, the chiddush of chesed that Ruth did, that from the little that she had, she actually would cut away, take food out of her own mouth to give to her mother-in-law. Where do you see that? We see it right here. The Sefer Bin Olitim. Let's take a look here. Next paragraph. The Sefer Bin Olitim. Those of us who took the trip to Italy, right, a few years ago, we stopped in Venice, of course. It was a major, major place. There were many reasons why we stopped in Venice, not just because the Goy Shevelt goes to Venice, because there's a tremendous Jewish history in Venice. Jewish history was because one of the first major, major publishing houses, right, going by when printing was invented in the 15th century, subsequently to that, Venice was one of the major, major centers of publishing of Jewish books. Therefore, the famous Bromberg Shas, gorgeous, gorgeous Shas, which has been preserved to this day. And it was found, believe it or not, in the British Museum had it, British Museum had it, and it was protected by Westminster Abbey. And there was a whole story, which is not time to go into it now, how a particular Judaica collector was able to sort of siphon that shas out and get them to sell it, to get the shas out into Jewish hands to be redeemed, he says, from the British government's clutches, so to speak. But in any case, so in Venice, we tried to go to the old ancient cemeteries, going back hundreds and hundreds of years. Unfortunately, they've been wiped out, many of them. We did find some few. And the Mechaber of the Bin Elitim, Rabbi Azariah Figo. Rabbi Azariah Figo, one of the great, great early giants, so we go back, you know, like in the 1400s, also Mechaber of the Sefer Gedulei Truma. And this Sefer of tremendous Baldarshan, and we give a lot of musa, a lot of rebuke, and this Sefer is called Bin Elitim, and he writes the following. The Sefer Bin Elitim, basically, he's medagdik in the Posik, he really is looking at the lotion of the Posik, b'meshikosu barus. We find barus, it's like this. She comes to the mother-in-law, and what did she give to the mother-in-law? Listen to the words. Ma'asher hoisiro achar sovo. She gave to her mother-in-law what was left over after she became satisfied. In Lashon Kodesh, it should have said, she brought mahanoisa, that which was left over. Hoisiro means which she left over. It doesn't say she gave to the mother-in-law that which was left over. She gave to the mother-in-law what she left over. Said the Bin Elitim, Ruth for herself at that time did not have enough for herself. But she makes sure to eat less to leave over for the mother-in-law. That's the Nikud of Chesed that we find out by Ruth. That's what the Bin Elitim bring up. She gave to the mother-in-law Asher Hoisira. She made sure to leave over. Not which naturally was left over because she ate her fill. And whatever was left over she gave. No. She didn't allow herself to eat her fill, because she gave that, right? She gave that which she could have eaten herself. She gave it up, right? So this is the point. This is the point that we find out. This is the point of Chesed. And then later on, look at number three very quickly. Just one more, two, three lines. Look at number three. Gam. So b'mabat vashkofe. Also, how to view Chesed. Am I giving? Am I really the giver, or maybe the taker is giving to me? That hashkofe, mi nechshav lenoisa, who considered to be the giver? Or mi nechshav lemekabel, gam bezeh motzino b'chazal, shenischadesh yisoydzeh b'divir Ruth. Ruth taught us who is the real giver. How? Shememena lomdu, sheyoysu mimasha noisa noisa lemekabel, more than the noisa gives to the receiver, hamekabel noisa lenoisa. Dahainu, Yaisa Mimasha Mashpia La Mushpa, more, right, than the one who's Mashpia on the receiver, Mashpia Ha Mushpa, the one who's receiving, is actually giving more to the Mashpia. How do we see that? Kishenomi Sholos Rus, Nomi asked Rus, Omro, this is the way she questioned. Fatoy Melocha Moisa, the mother-in-law asked Rus, Eifa Lakatata Hayoim. Where did you collect today? Where did you gather the food that you got? Where did you gather today? The honor osis ye makirech boruch. What she said was ye makirech. In other words, may the one that gave you generous notice let him be blessed. Now the one who allowed you to collect, makirech, the one who noticed you, gave you generous notice, let him be blessed. What did she say? What did she answer? The taglach hamoisa was answered. She said, this and this is the person asher osos ha'imoy that I did with him. The truth is, Boaz did for her. What do you mean, I did for him? She should have said, this is the person who did for me. That's not what she said. The tiger Hamoisa is Asher also saw Imoy, which she did with him. The name of the man, Asher Asisi, I owe him that I did, his name is Boaz. What do you mean, I did for him? He did for me. So Chazal come from here, we learn, Rus was teaching us. When someone does a gewaltig act of chesed, when you do an act of chesed, realize that even on the outset it appears that you are giving to the other, you're giving, the other is taking, the truth is the other way around. That's a quote that's quoted everywhere. It's Tams of Medrash in Rus, but where does it come from? From this pasuk, from this lashon that we find talking from Rus. So we always have to bear that in mind. And the truth is, we end with this, that Rav Dessler, in Sefer Michtam Eliyahu, points out like this, and we learned Michtam Eliyahu also, you might remember a number of years ago. Rav Dessler says the following, in the world there are different kinds of people. In the world there are takers, and there are world that are givers. There are people who give all the time, There are people who take all the time. There are people, sometimes they give, sometimes they take. Hopefully we're one of those, at least. But Rav Dessler tells us the hallmark of a Yid is to be a giver. It's to be a noiser, not to be a noital. That's what defines a Yid. Someone who's always on the take, says Rav Dessler, that is lacking the essence, the ingredients, the genetic makeup of Yid is to be able to be a giver. And that, as we've seen, there has never been, there was an article once in one of the secular newspapers, of bewilderment and astonishment, how to find out that in the Jewish community, there are literally, not hundreds, thousands of free loan societies, granting loans, interest-free. It's a mind-boggling thing, you could not believe it. That's because why? Because this is the hallmark of Yid, to be a giver and to understand that. Plus, remember, whatever we give, Kadosh Baruch Hu pays us back. Hashem, we should be zoichet to be mekabel the Torah. With the mid of chesed, Kadosh Baruch Hu will give us mid of midas, will return his chesed to all of us.